Welcome to Endpoint Sight on Republic Broadcasting Network. Please go to republicbroadcasting.org. Smash the donate button. Send the much-needed fundage to keep free speech alive. You can mail your check or money order payable to RBN 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Call it into 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. This is your Monday night broadcast. I have special guests tonight from the Rebel Madman Radio, 3 p.m. Central here on RBN on Saturdays. Mike Gaddy. Mike, welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
Doing very well, Jeremy. Thanks for inviting me.
Glad to have you. I wanted to invite you on as somewhat of a response to your appearance on Richard Carey's show on Friday on the Roundtable, Beyond the Official Narrative. You were on with Don Advil and a couple of other guests, at least one other. And it was a very interesting show. And I wanted to sort of get your take on where do we go from here. And I think a lot of my listeners are familiar with you and your work. If you'll give me just a few moments to sort of summarize where you stand. The federal government, this government was designed for elites. The Constitution is designed for those that rule over us. It was pretty much a power grab of the founding fathers, the elites of the time, from the British government. And to quote Mather Biles, which I've quoted much, and I heard this quote first in the movie The Patriot, but Mather Biles is quoted as saying, "Which is better, to be ruled by one tyrant 3,000 miles away or by 3,000 tyrants 1 mile away?" And I think that pretty much summarizes what happened. And you see this play out in Shays' Rebellion, close to the time of the ratifying of the Constitution, and the Whiskey Rebellion, 1791. This government had no interest in giving we the people the rights. They wanted the money for themselves rather than to go to the British government. I think that's pretty much where you stand in my summary. Let me kick it to you for comment or further revision on your stance.
Well, Jeremy, that's a pretty concise representation. The problem is we're never going to get an indoctrinated, thoroughly indoctrinated people of 330 million. We're never going to get a sufficient number of those to acknowledge the truth of the founding of this country and the fact that it was, as you so succinctly stated, it was founded by the wealthy aristocracy for the wealthy aristocracy. The government was designed to protect the government from the people. And the Bill of Rights, if you really go into study of the Bill of Rights into a very deep detail, you will find out how that the lawyers present in the first Congress in both the House of Representatives and in the Senate, how they manipulated the wording of the amendments to make them susceptible to federal rule. And even there was a comment made at the first Senate. The comment was made, well, these rights don't belong to the people anyway. So what? And most people don't even want to believe that for a moment. We still have, you know, how many groups out there still yelling and screaming about their wonderful Second Amendment when the Second Amendment is the only one that says, you know, shall not be infringed, and it's the most infringed amendment of all, but yet they still think it's going to work. Now, Einstein had a word for that, people who expect the same, you know, who do the same thing over and over again expecting a different result. And I'm just not sure. Until things get really, really, really uncomfortable, Jeremy, that you're going to wake up a lot of people. Now, there are a lot more people waking up now. I see that every day. But when will the sufficient numbers come along? Because what will happen with all PSYOPs is that all of us who believe as we believe and who have seen the truth, have seen it documented, and have seen the results of the truth, we will become the dire enemy of those who still love government. Back to you, sir.
So we can see this in the early writings. I mean, it was very plain that the rights of people who govern were pretty much limited to, you know, white men that owned property. And you can understand sort of at the time, I guess, the average worker, the average farmer, they're not able to educate themselves. They really weren't able to participate in government. You can see that, and that's sort of the excuse that you hear as to why the writings were like that. But it's there. It's there if you read it, and I've heard you expound on it many times on your show. And so here's what I want to sort of focus on tonight, if you would. Sure. Where do we go from here? This is the hand that we've been dealt, and we can look at the COVID alleged pandemic and the government crackdown on the populace. We can look at that and we can sort of glean some data. They gleaned a lot of data off of us, but we were able to glean some things off of them. So here's some things I want to bring up. Some of the things I noticed, right, during the alleged pandemic. So you had state governors. Some of them, you know, did their executive orders. Some of them didn't. You had health departments given tremendous amounts of power, unelected officials. They're not even officials. They're unelected citizens that were able to close restaurants and businesses, right? And one thing that I noticed in the enforcement of this, because what we're going to get down to in this discussion is the enforcement. You can put a law out there, but how it's enforced and if it's enforced is another matter entirely. We had in West Kentucky, and I know in many, many other parts of rural America, even in New York and some of the rural areas there, I mean, we had sheriffs that openly, in West Kentucky, they put statements out on their social media saying they were not going to enforce mask mandates or business closures. But what we saw was state troopers in the various states who, if I'm understanding right, are operating directly under the governors. It was the state troopers here in West Kentucky, anyway, that enforced the so-called mandates. Now, let me give you an example. There was a restaurant that refused to close in summer of 2020. It was close to Calvert City and Draftonville, Kentucky, two cities that are right there on the interstate coming into the Purchase Parkway. And the state troopers went to these restaurants. The sheriffs and the local police left them alone. They were going to let them run. But the state troopers came in there and threatened the business owners of this particular restaurant called Majestic. It's a Greek restaurant. They threatened them that they would be arrested if they didn't close. So they didn't even follow the protocols of, hey, we're going to notify the health department. Health department's going to pull your license. Then you would be arrested for operating without a license. That's sort of like the play that they were going to take, right? Because really they didn't have any authority. The state troopers had no authority to stop these people from doing commerce, right? They were supposed to go through the health department. They didn't even do that. And the restaurant owners caved. You know, if every restaurant owner would have stood up and said, we're not closing, we're going to make you go through the protocol of health department pulling the license, you're going to have to take all 20 or 30 restaurants in the town and businesses to court. They didn't go through that. They didn't press the test. Out of fear of having to be arrested and go to jail, they just shut down. Now, that's point number one, is that the people cowered under the fear of this tyranny that was put on them by the state troopers. And then number two, what should have happened, operating under what we're dealt under the Constitution and the state Constitution that we're dealt, what should have happened is the restaurant owners should have been able to call the sheriffs to come to the restaurant and get the state police off the property because they're operating unconstitutionally. None of that happened. So even though the local sheriffs and cops didn't per se close businesses, they neglected to uphold the Constitution that we're under, that they say we're under. They neglected to do that. They would not have had a showdown with the state police. So here's just a couple of things I want to throw out at you. And we can glean things from this as to what happened in the past and what could happen in the future when they do this again, and they will. Maybe it's a virus. Maybe it's climate lockdowns. Who knows what they're going to do? But they didn't do all of that mess 3 and 2 years ago for nothing. They did that for a purpose. They're setting us up for something bigger. So that's what I want to sort of throw to you. How should we operate from here, even though we're under an illegitimate government? How do we play these cards that were dealt?
Well, Jeremy, unfortunately, you hit it right on the nose. We have to play the cards we're dealt. And the thing that we have done is we have exalted in the mind. It's an emotional job. We have exalted in the minds of the American public that these people who wear badges and who wear guns and uniforms are heroes. And no one's going to question a hero. And that's part of the mental psyop. That is part of what is out there. Now, why did the sheriff in that particular area, why didn't he not stand up for the people who elected him? He had to, at some point, Jeremy, make a decision. You know, and that would be the thing that I would love to do, was to call the gentleman, talk to him, and say, okay, what was your thought process? And then you mentioned something else, if I could throw something in very quickly. When I lived in Colorado, I was had helped quite a bit, helped two gentlemen get elected to the county commissioners because they refused to run with any political party. They were totally independents. They wanted to be for the people. Both of them served 8 years and proved to be very good county commissioners. And, of course, they're term limited, so they're out. But one of them came on one of my programs maybe 2 years ago. And right in the middle of all of this stuff, or very close to it, Jeremy. And you talk about the pre-planning, and I think this is important, is because on our radio show, he made the comment. He said, well, way back in the summer of 2019, he said that the state of Colorado, the governor's office and others, told us that they wanted to establish a kind of a health organization in our county, all of whom would be appointed by the governor, and that they would make all of any critical health decisions for our county. And both of the two county commissioners that I mentioned earlier, both of them told the governor, not no, but hell no. We're not turning over the control of our county in any important aspect, such as health, to people who haven't been elected by these people to represent them. And so then this county commissioner told me that it wasn't, you know, maybe 5-6 months later, they found a man dead in the city park in that county. And the county is Montezuma, the city is Cortez, Colorado. They found a Native American or American Indian dead, and they took him in and did an autopsy. And his alcohol level was 0.39. Well, the autopsy says he died from alcohol poisoning. And then the county commissioners got a notice from the governor's office and said, we are reclassifying his death as he died from COVID. And the county commissioner said, no, you're not. That's not being done in our county. Well, then they found out shortly thereafter that the city council, the county seat, the city council accepted a $200,000 grant from the governor's office to classify that death as a COVID death. So these plans, and I don't mean to complicate or make people, you know, look at too much stuff, but I think it's important that we lay out how these things are done. These things are done in advance, far in advance, trying to turn all of the health decisions over to a health board that is unelected and is totally appointed by a governor who's going to issue these orders, which he did, to shut everything down. That was pre-planning, and they do this all the time. And I think, Jeremy, the thing that we have to do is to learn to educate enough people, you're doing a heck of a job of it, to go out there and to educate enough people so that they can see the first stages coming, and start preparing for them and not be totally surprised. when it happens, because it's going to happen. You're exactly correct. They're going to come back with something else again. You know, and I think the president has already said, that there would be another pandemic. Well, you know, how many people are aware that in 2017, that, I can't remember his name now, but he, Anthony Fauci, made the public statement that there would be a pandemic under the Trump administration. Now, how did he know that? I think that go ahead. I'm sorry, sir.
Right. It was planned. No, I was just answering your question. It was planned.
Yes. And so then I think the thing that we do and we work at doing, and again, you know, not to be redundant, but you do a good job of it, is to try to keep the people who listen, to try to give them pointers and to try to tell them, look, these things are planned. This is not a happenstance. These things are planned by this wealthy elite, and they're doing it to fill their pockets. They don't care about the small businessman. They don't care about anybody else. I made the statement on social media that why would anyone think that a government that would give your child a vaccine, which could kill them, would ever give you justice in their court system? I think that Americans just have a real problem connecting the dots, Jeremy.
And it is unfortunate. It's a good thing, and it's unfortunate at the same time that white American men tend to want to put themselves under authority. I mean, it's just ingrained in them. They were born to want to think that this authority is good for them, right? And I think one thing we found out in COVID is that a lot of people realized that it wasn't good for them. And so there is a resistance possible. There's even a resistance possible under this illegitimate government that we're under, the cards that we've been dealt, as it were. And I think that's what I'm focusing on tonight. And that may be one of the criticisms. I don't think anyone is pushing back on your data. But in your talk with Don Anderle on Friday, I think one of the things was, well, okay, that's all well and great. It's illegitimate, but how do we push back? How do we go forward? And you had a lot of pushback under state legislatures. I'll just emphasize Kentucky because I'm more familiar. All of us parents went to school boards, and we told them in fall of 2021 that we're not wearing the masks. Our kids aren't doing the mask, and that we're pulling our kids out. That happened in all over Kentucky, but specifically West Kentucky. So just the sheer amount of numbers, you're talking about here in Hickman County, a county between the Kentucky Lake and the Mississippi River, in a school of 500 students, junior high to high school, over 100 students were pulled because they would not do the mask. And parents got up and we said, look, if they can mandate the mask, they can mandate vaccines, they can mandate critical race theory, training curriculum, and all of that. That scared the state enough that the legislation was put out stating that local school boards could put forth curriculum and you know, things during pandemic, but not the state. We're up on the break, Mr. Getty. If you would hold on, we'll come back and revisit this on the other side.
Sure.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Hey, we're coming back to In Plain Sight, special guest Mike Gaddy. And I was just talking about rebelling against the system, pushing back under the Constitution that we've been dealt, under the rules that they're giving us. And sheer numbers seem to be one of the ways that we can push back, getting the numbers. Now, these numbers don't sound significant maybe in large parts of the area, but in a school of 500 students from 8th to 12th grade, you had over 200 parents representing 100 students that said, we're going to pull these kids out. We're going to homeschool them, because if you can implement the mask, you can implement whatever you want. And that prompted legislation. So that was a good thing. So we do have some pushback going on there on the state level. Many other states did that. But I talked to the sheriff. This is interesting, Mike. I talked to the sheriff who was present at the school board meeting. And I said, what was going on behind the scenes that night that we all protested and gave speeches? And he said that the superintendent and the school boards told the sheriff to disperse the crowd, and the sheriff refused. Now, look, I had these people in the palm of my hands. My speech was quite fiery, if I may say so, if I may brag just a bit. I seriously could have gotten these people to go back home and gotten weapons and come back to the school. And that sheriff knew that, and he was responding to the numbers of people. So that's one thing that we need to consider. We got to have numbers, and we've got to pick our battles and know when and where to fight this thing. Because in rural areas like where I'm at, that's the battleground. In these bigger cities, you're not going to get that. That crowd was, crowds were dispersed in bigger cities. Hell's Bells, Merrick Garland, Moshe Garfinkel, the Jew. That's what prompted him to label parents that spoke out at school board meetings as white nationalist terrorists, right? And to actually try to prosecute these parents. So the numbers is one thing. Influencing legislation, we had a lot of great legislation in Kentucky. You have, you know, where churches cannot be closed in a pandemic. We have legislation where you're not allowed to put boys and girls bathrooms, and you're not allowed to teach children about trannyism. We had a lot of great legislation that came out of the COVID response because the numbers of parents that showed up, the numbers of people that came out, and the local law enforcement, I mean, the people that are enforcing these unconstitutional laws with badges and guns, they feared the populace. I think that's key number one in pushing back. Legislation is great, but they need to fear people getting guns. I hate the Fed post, but this is the way it is. And showing up and pushing back on this, that's one aspect. Let me get your comments on that, and then we'll move on.
Well, the first thing is, and, you know, you made the comment right before the break, and you were talking about the conversation I had on Richard's show. And here's the thing that troubles me, and let me get this out front here, is that an ignorance of how this system was put together 230-some years ago, an ignorance of that leads people to think they can beat the system by using the system. And they are totally unaware that all of these contingencies that we talk about, states standing up for themselves, all of these things were discussed, planned for, and prepared for from the very beginning. If you will remember, probably five, six months ago, the state of Missouri, the people of Missouri said, look, we've had enough of this stuff. We're coming up with the Second Amendment Preservation Act, and it was a state law. It was passed. One federal judge struck it down. Now, do you think that the federal judges in this country who are unelected, who owe no allegiance to anyone except the people who put them in that chair and who pay their salary, do you think for a minute that they're going to stand with the people against the government?
No. No, not at all. And I've stated before that we live in a critarchy, but it really is an oligarchy because, as you pointed out, wealthy people, Jewish-dominated elite, pay these people. These judges all go through Harvard and Yale. You can read it in An Empire of Their Own. Well, that's Hollywood. You can read it in The Chosen, Getting In, where Jews brag about dominating upper academia. And so there's a bottleneck of all these federal judges going through Harvard and Yale, the majority of them. And regardless of their religious backgrounds or their political stance, they're brainwashed, and they'll go with the system. You're absolutely correct.
Well, the point of it is that, again, the people at the Constitutional Convention, especially the people on the Committee of Style and Arrangement, and the people who in the first Congress, which was totally dominated by the Federalists, the people who wrote the Constitution were then administering the Constitution. And if you don't have the background, if you don't understand why they put certain wording in stuff, if you don't understand that, you operate under the delusion that you can actually fix this thing by using it. And that is exactly what they wanted you to think. They wanted you to think that there is recourse. There is no recourse. They shut you down at every gate.
All right, we're coming up on the next break. Hold that thought. We'll be back on the other side.
There's something I want to say. Since you've been gone, there's no one taking your place.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To learn more about this amazing breakthrough, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Everyone around me seems to get sick but me. My brother got the flu twice. My mother was down with some sort of fever. People at work were taking sick days off, and others were just plain tired and run down. And me? Well, I just keep feeling great all the time with Extendovite. My grandfather used to talk about the power of garlic and other herbs he took that kept him healthy. I'm lucky. Extendovite was just what I needed to keep me healthy, and Extendovite is all natural. Extendovite was designed for the heart but does so much more by keeping me healthy all the time. I'll take Extendovite forever. Get your 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. My name is Rick, and you can be like me just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A 1-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Memory, your landline is burning holes. Recover the damage, bring it all home. Follow the blues, just like a summer song.
Okay, we're coming back to Endpoint Sight. We got Mike Gaddy on. So we were just discussing ways to protest against this. And even though we may have good legislation in place in wake of the COVID fakedemic, the government still has ways to push down on the public and enforce their will. Let me just put a few examples out there. You got Shays Rebellion right about the time of the ratification of the Constitution, 1786 and 87, that was actually put down by state militia and privately funded militia, if I understand correctly. The Whiskey Rebellion in 1791, led by Washington, was put down by the federal government going through governors. And you can draw a correlation to this in the 1950s, the late 1950s, when desegregation was forced at gunpoint in Little Rock, Arkansas. And so when the government wants to enforce its will, it will do that. It will do that with guns and armies, and it will mow down the public, the populace, in order to enforce their will. They've proven that, and the populace will cower down. So there are three very solid examples of what you're talking about this government exists for the people that rule over us, and not for the people themselves. Let me get your comments on that, and then maybe we can open up to callers.
Well, Jeremy, one of the first things I would like to do is to point to your illustration of the Whiskey Rebellion. And here again, people who do not know history, but they want to pontificate on and on about how we can fix things, and they don't know how it got broke. Pardon my phraseology, but they don't understand that. If we go back to the Whiskey Rebellion, why did Washington make Alexander Hamilton, the Secretary of Treasury, a lieutenant general, and put him at the head of the army to invade Pennsylvania to enforce a whiskey tax, which was a completely unconstitutional move, Article 4, Section 4. But why did he only invade Pennsylvania, Jeremy?
Interesting to make an example of one state, similarly to how they made an example of Little Rock, Arkansas in the late 1950s. Is that correct?
No. The reason they did it in Philadelphia is because, especially in the South, every state legislature had told them to take their whiskey tax and shove it. And every state legislature said, we will not appoint tax collectors and we will not hold courts to try people who do not pay the tax. So the people, and that's why you don't hear about this, they can't let people know that you had a majority of states that told them, hey, forget this. They had to make a big point. That's why they put together an army larger than Washington ever had during the Revolution to invade a state to put the people in prison for not paying a tax. Now, ironically, the tax was really funny. The tax was only on the poor people. The larger distilleries didn't have a tax. There was no tax on the larger distilleries. There was no tax on champagne or any of the exotic beverages that the rich people drink. All the taxes were simply on the whiskey that was produced by the poor people. There was a reason for that. But they will not tell you in school that a majority of the states told the federal government, no, we're not doing that. We're just not going to appoint tax collectors. We're not going to appoint courts to prosecute them. We're just not going to do that. But what did it take? But even at that, you had an armed incursion unconstitutionally. This governor didn't ask for it. Neither did the legislature, the state of Pennsylvania. Neither one of them asked for it. And then, ironically, Jeremy, that point was the very point Abraham Lincoln used as justification for invading the South to collect taxes. We aren't taught that either.
Fascinating. So my retort was going to be, Mike, if every state in the South had rebelled against the whiskey tax with arms, wouldn't that have done it? But then you're just squashing my point. The Civil War, the alleged Civil War,
exactly,
war of Northern aggression, that proved their dominance over us.
Well, it does.
That's what would have happened.
Well, do you think it's an accident that the president that violated the Constitution more than any president in the history of this country is considered our number one president, Abraham Lincoln?
Oh.
You think that's an accident?
The Republican Marxist president. No.
Yes.
It's not an accident.
And so he didn't declare war. You know, and, you know, how many people are aware that there has been, and I hate to mention the Supreme Court because they're paid for as well, but the Supreme Court did say early on in its existence that the Congress could not delegate its powers. And so every time we have a president declaring war, he does not have the power. I don't care what the Congress says. Well, we'll make a provision. It cannot supersede the Constitution as it's written, and they don't care. George Bush said the Constitution is just another GD piece of paper, and that's the way they all feel, Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, did the American populace really support Korea, Vietnam, the first Iraq war, the invasion of Iraq in 2003? No, that was not publicly supported, and they went ahead and done it anyway. So here's what I'm going to press you on, Mike.
Okay. Go.
What then is the recourse?
The recourse is education. Jeremy, we can't be spinning our wheels because it's too late in the game. We can't be spinning our wheels pretending that we can get state legislatures to overrule the federal government. We can't be wasting that effort. If you only have so many resources, you can't waste them on things that are never going to produce anything. Education is the key. People have to understand this was done to us before. How did they do it? How do we counter it? You cannot say that, hey, we will defeat the federal courts by using the federal courts. That is about as asinine a statement as anyone can ever make.
Well, right, because Kentucky and Tennessee both have legislation against child trannyism, against mutilating children's genitals under 18. And yet, federal judges, just one federal judge in each state has protested this, and they pushed it to the federal government. So if push comes to shove, and you got children wanting to get their balls chopped off and their weenies, and little girls wanting to get their breasts mutilated because they've been indoctrinated, if push comes to shove, the federal government could just send in the military
yes.
to enforce that. They've got a precedent, Little Rock, Arkansas.
Well, Little Rock, don't forget George Wallace in Alabama. George Wallace, if people will read that speech, of course, everybody wants to hate George Wallace because, you know, he was such a racist. And how many people know that? Usually in his elections, he had as many as 70 to 80% of the black population voting for him when he ran for office. But the federal government couldn't let you know that. So, but anyway, he got condemned for that segregation now, segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. He got blamed for that, but you don't read the rest of the speech. In the rest of the speech, he outlines exactly what this government is preparing to do. That's why they had to try to kill him, Jeremy. He had the notes on this, and he was going to try to use them to the best of his ability, and he wanted to educate people. And ironically, when he said segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever, he just repeated a Supreme Court decision, Plessy v. Ferguson, separate okay. but equal.
By the way, we're taking calls 512-248-8252 if you want to weigh in. But no, that is the criticism of what you're putting forth is, okay, you're putting forth good info. We're not going to doubt it. How do we go forward? And it doesn't look like we can go forward, even with arms. We got James in Vancouver holding on. Mike, address that, and then maybe we can go to the call.
Well, we can't, Jeremy. We can't address this until we understand the enemy that we're fighting. And as long as we have people out there who give people the illusion, the easy illusion, because everybody's looking for the easy path. They don't want to expend a lot of effort. They don't want to expend a lot of time or energy. They want the easy way. So when these people come on talk shows or whatever and start telling people, oh, yeah, we can fix this. All we need to do is to file a lawsuit in this court or in that court, and we'll get – and history proves them liars. But that is a false hope for so many people. Oh, we can use this to make it work. It's not going to work.
In the meantime, while people are talking about – you know, addressing their grievances, they're just coming down with more tyranny.
Yes, and, you know, let's not forget that in the First Amendment, it says that the people have a right for redress of to present a request for redress of grievances. But how many people know that this wonderful Supreme Court on three separate occasions has said, yes, you have a right to petition for a redress of grievances, but there's nothing in there that says we have to answer them.
And that was proven in the 2020 election hoax.
Absolutely.
The Supreme Court refused to address that. They would not. Hey, Mike, if you would, let's go with James in Vancouver. Let's take a call. James in Vancouver, welcome to the show.
Good evening, gentlemen. I just wanted to make an observation here, and that is what Mike's doing with that research on the letters and such, the actual hard documents, what he's doing is establishing the mens rea for the crimes these SOBs created, you see. When I want to prove somebody guilty of a crime, I got to do two things. One is establish that they committed the act, and the next thing I got to establish is that they had the mind to do it, which is the mens rea. And those letters are providing just that. Back to you for your comments.
Well, thanks, James.
Yeah,
good to hear from you, sir. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mike. Take that one.
Well,
no,
it's,
I was just kicking to you, Mike.
I think that thank you encapsulated there, James, and thank you so much for that. You encapsulated what I've been trying to say here for, about 30 years now. If we are going to defeat this system, we have to understand it. No one has ever defeated an enemy that they didn't understand.
Right. Now, any lawyer, my next point is, any lawyer should know that, what this does is establish mens rea. And to say that somebody's trying to trash the country because they're trying to look up the facts, I think that's exactly a telling sign of someone who doesn't, this is the point, is all lawyers know mens rea and actus reus, and this is exactly what criminal law is all about. Back to you.
Well, James, if I may very quickly here, Jeremy, I was a consultant from 2017 through 2018 for the Arkansas Trial Lawyers Association. And let me tell you something, traveling around all of those counties in Arkansas, meeting all those attorneys, let me tell you something, there might have been three attorneys in that entire state you could call conservative. And the reason for that is not their fault. They are taught in law schools, and they are taught Marxist principles from day one. And well, so they're Marxist. It's simple.
Yeah. Well, I went to school at the University of London in England Law School, and I took lessons at Cambridge University Law School. So that's my background. And I was 10 years a paralegal for a hotshot outfit from the Eastern Seaboard. So I'll just let you guys go, and thanks again for your show.
Thanks, James. Thank you for calling,
sir.
You're
welcome. I know. Yes, sir. Bye.
Thanks for your call. I want to bring up a lark in Texas, but I want to put this out there first. What this is going to come down to, and we can see it from the case of Younger in Dallas. His children were taken from him by his trashy modern female wife, ex-wife, and his parental rights were stripped. And Jeff Younger was told that his wife could transfer their children and move to California, where you can transfer children under 18 without affording address. And so what this is going to come down to is, are they going to take your children or not? Are you going to arm yourself up and stop them from taking your children? That seems to me what it's going to come down to. Like it or love it, like it or hate it, that's what it seems to me like.
Jeremy? Oh, I'm sorry,
go ahead,
sir.
Mike,
but could I interject something? Could I interject something here very quickly?
Please.
During my time in Arkansas, I got to know a lady who was just absolutely there for what she felt like was the right reasons. And I believe she was. And we ended up in a lot of conversations. We had dinner together a couple of times. We talked about an awful lot of things. Two things that were really important to her as a legislator. And number one was to find some way to stop Child Protective Service from seizing people's children under falsified reasons. And then for those children winding up in places where what they experienced was just absolutely horrible. And she was very much against that. She was fighting against that. She was also fighting against the other thing that she really wanted to stop, was seizure of money by law enforcement or courts without proving a crime had occurred. Now, the feds are really into this. Seize your assets. Seize this. Seize that. But many times they don't ever prove a crime was committed, but they keep seizing money. Well, this senator from Arkansas, I'm not going to get into it. I'll let you folks look it up. This senator from Arkansas was named Linda Collins Smith. Go to the internet, see what happened to her.
Wow. And just one more thing to throw in the mix. And we got Lark in Texas. Go ahead and bring Lark on. And I want to put this out there, that Joe Brandon, Biden, has an executive order in place that anybody that has supported Russia in this Ukraine-Russia war, and I don't want to make this about Russia, I don't care, I don't have a dog in that fight. The Russia-Ukraine war, as far as I'm concerned, is about slaughtering white Slavic people, okay, for the system. But Joe Brandon has put in place an executive order that anyone that supports Russia could have their assets frozen and seized. And so we've got that. So they could go back through any of your internet posts, because most Trump supporters, right-wingers, are pro-Russia and anti-war Ukraine. And that's a way to sort of throw a dragnet down on the entire populace of right-wingers and get them in litigation if they've put anything out there at all. And that's what we can look forward in the future. Any people that did not totally support the Ukraine, or especially people that supported Russia, could be targeted and their assets frozen. That executive order is in place right now. Throwing that out there. Let's go to Lark in Texas. Lark, what's your comments? And then we'll let Mike Gaddy address.
Well, I appreciate my friend James's comment regarding mens rea. Let's not forget that, you know, we have a federal government that has actually authorized the lying to the American people with the Smith-Month Modernization Act, so-called. And actually, the reason I called is because I didn't know when I was going to get an opportunity to present this to you, Mike. Recently, you were on a roundtable with a sociologist named Keith Preston and a civil rights attorney named John Advil. Do you recall the instance?
Yes, I do.
Were you aware who these people even were when you were invited onto that roundtable?
No.
Yeah, I know quite a bit about these two folks. Keith Preston, attackthesystem.com. Anyone can look him up. Of course, he styles himself as an anarchist. He's an author. And, you know, it's clear that Mr. Advo has, you know, that's a pen name, of course, for advocate, I suspect. I've looked at his history, and I realized right away that the two of you were going to butt heads just because of your grasp of history. But that's why I called. It's because I just wanted to know if you even were aware of who these two gentlemen were when you participated in that roundtable. And then otherwise, I'll let you all close out the show. Go ahead.
Well, thanks for the call, Lark. And just let me say this. Anyone who thinks they're going to gain my respect by saying I'm trying to tear down the fabric of America by telling the truth, we're not going to get along.
Yeah, I think even the Army War College manual, the training manual from 1928, pretty much spelled out the differences between the capitalist system and the communist system. You know, both of these systems, so-called, are really kind of run by the same crowd at the very top. And so, you know, we have to come to grips with the fact that the free enterprise system is pretty much gone, which we thought was the hallmark of capitalism. And then communism, of course, attaches itself to Judaic law or Talmudic law, as well as to cultural Marxism. And so this is what we're being beat over the head with, the American people, on a daily basis through this big media criminal protection racket. And then finally, I'll just say this. You know, the American Bar Association, the Lawyers Guilds, and the American Medical Association, these are syndicalist trade unions, all of them. National Governors Association is a trade union. U.S. Conference of Mayors, the same. And it doesn't matter if they are left or right, or however you perceive them on the political spectrum today. They're all working in tandem for the same thing. And I'm going to tag you on my most recent Facebook post, Mike, because I want people to realize that Talmudic law has entered into the American courts, onto the law books, unbeknownst to the American people for some time now. And the evidence is as plain as the nose on our faces, but we just don't see it. And there is quite a distinction between what we perceive as judicious jurisprudence and what is Talmudic law. And Talmudic law is synonymous with communitarian law, which is the same law that was 70-plus years in the making that created the European Union. This is the model legal underpinning for one-world global governance today.
And we're going to have to talk about this because it's not what we think. Thanks again.
So hang on, Lark. I've got one thing to put out to both of you guys, Lark and Mike Getty. So I was at a Stormfront conference in 2016, and Sam Dixon was one of the speakers. And Sam Dixon pretty much has the same stance, if I've understood correctly, as Mike Getty. But Lark, you've labeled Sam Dixon as a communitarian. Maybe both of you could comment on him. Sam Dixon's stance is that America was not legitimate as founded, and therefore we're living under, you know, an illegitimate constitution, so-called. Lark, let me get your take on that and then kick it over to Mike to see if he's familiar with Sam Dixon's work.
Sam Dixon is another hero of the so-called alt-right, white nationalist today. He is also a civil rights attorney. And I didn't label him as much. He himself labels himself as much. You can find it at Richard Spencer, who's from Dallas, by the way. Trust fund baby, just like Melinda French Gates is also from Dallas. But it was called, the piece is called America, the God That Failed. And that was the title of the his address at a leadership conference 10 years ago. And within the first 2 to 3 minutes of that address, he said himself he was a communitarian. And yet he's a hero to people of, say, of the Jared Taylor crowd, you know, American Renaissance, David Duke, and all these people that simply have just not done their homework, or they're maybe fudging a little bit. I don't know, but it's about time we really had some honest conversations, and I refuse to yield to the hero worship of these so-called celebrity sellout PAY patriots anymore.
Mike Getty, do you have a retort to that in the couple of seconds we have left?
Well, the response I had planned is not negative in any way, because he's right. I like what Dixon says, except for when he, and these people will, if they're controlled opposition, will from time to time tell you who they are. And, I have some other thoughts, but we're running out of time, buddy. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mike, for coming on. Thanks, Lark. We'll be back tomorrow night with Patrick and Jeremy. You guys stay classy.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.